Good evening, bodhisattvas. It's good to be all cozied in here together tonight. while the bare branches settle into the night sky. Tonight's talk insisted on starting in a kind of odd place, just because it was persistent that way. And the place is this phrase that keeps coming up for me recently, girding our loins. an old Hebrew expression. And and just sort of incidentally, I had a dream in the early morning that may not seem like it has to do with girding our loins, but I think to me it kind of was in the same territory. And it was, I don't remember too much detail, but a number of us were in a building in a space that kind of had this shape, except I think the walls were kind of golden colored and it was a new place, and it was bare. My father was there and other people, and it was a new place for us to hold our meditations. It was a new place for community. And I was filled with a kind of gratitude about, even though it was a very plain and empty space, this new place. And I woke up thinking that's kind of odd, because it does feel like a new place. You know, there is definitely a before and after to this time. And there was something interesting and sort of commanding and at the same time reassuring about this dream of a new place with my father in it, who was a figure of great strength for me. And when I have thought of myself as not having quite enough backbone, sometimes I imagine myself incorporating my father's spine. My father was strong and gentle at the same time, and a person of great integrity. So girding our loins, and you know, the expression had a particular meaning. So if you were wearing a long robe or skirt, you would sort of like reach behind you and grab up a whole bunch of the cloth, right? Bring it up, no, from the back, bring it back behind you, and then sort of divide it into two, and bring it around and tie it in the front, so that your long skirt now became shorts, you know, and you could move. You were ready to move easily. And, but I thought, you know, as a woman, you think of it as something that men did when they were getting ready to go and, you know, go into battle or something. And I'm like, no, it's not that though. It's not that exactly. But there is this sense of preparing to be able to move easily. And then I thought, as a woman, what is it? And thought about, you know, girdles, and how my generation was the generation that got rid of girdles. and yet my grandmother had this sort of formidable girdle that she wore, which was really to strengthen her back. It was nothing to do with fashion, believe me. And girders, you know, on a bridge are the metal that strengthens the bridge. And so I thought, what about... So then I started to picture girding our loins. as a woman. And I found that the image had gold spirals and red flowers on it. And so what kind of girding is that? To gird my loins with gold spirals and red flowers. And then I looked briefly and found that there's a reference in First Peter in the Bible of girding up the loins of your mind. And I thought, that's interesting. What is it to gird the loins of my mind? To take the robes of my mind, the big skirt of my mind, and gather it up around me so that I can move easily. What's that? And then as a disarming rather than an arming, that as a, you know, you're making your legs bare when you do that. And it doesn't feel like armor. It feels like simplifying in some way. And so, and there's a kind of disarming about that. So if I want my mind to be able to move easily, then in a way my task is to disarm, to lighten the load. Yeah, for my mind. And maybe to go for gold spirals and flowers rather than the usual equipment I carry around in my mind. So there's also, though, in this image for me of girding my loins, there's something to do with protecting and concentrating breath and mind and light and darkness, the gravity. So a kind of holding of a kind of dressing of the core parts of me. So breath, light, and darkness, and the sort of gravity of the core, and also eros, you know, the energy of connection and of bliss, of delight, of birth, and the mysteries of erotic energy, to be ready to move with everything that is core, to dance from there. And so in my koan practice, to hold the koan in like a lover. Because life seems so precious and so delicate these days. I was walking this afternoon down in the field behind my house, and under a big old cottonwood tree, I found a whole lot of hawk feathers. A hawk died there, clearly. I don't know how. I didn't witness that. But here was this scattering of beautiful hawk feathers in the field among the fallen leaves. And a couple nights ago, my little dog, when I took her out in the night, was rooting around under the catmint plant, and she pulled something out, and I thought, huh. And so from under the catmint plant, she had pulled this little bird. little dead bird. And there's just so much for me right now, that feeling of the vulnerability of life. And having the news today about protesters getting shot with water cannons in the freezing cold. And that. And also the little 2-month-old baby that I got to meet on the weekend, whose parents were my former cadets, whose marriage I officiated. And now here's this little person, this new little person, needing quite a bit of protection and care, and with eyes of wonder starting out in the world. This world, to dance from there. So what is it? And then this, on my screen appeared this singing of Joan Baez, Bread and Roses, all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses, for the people here are singing Bread and Roses, Bread and Roses. Yeah, that light that we carry in us and together, that light that will sing Bread and Roses, Bread and Roses. So how do we gird up our loins in a new way that is not about battle? Starting with a large skirt and with stillness. It seems important to be able to be slow in this, to be able to sit in meditation, to be able to walk quietly, to be able to sing and cook and take care of each other. I read a quote, "Uncertainty inflates our estimates of threat, and we can be paralyzed by panic." And that is certainly true. But uncertainty can also do something else for us. When we practice holding it, when we practice holding it as the family treasure, what if uncertainty is the family treasure? Yeah? What would it mean then to treasure it, to treasure this uncertainty, to hold it as the gift of this moment? We get still and nourish the core. We go outside, we touch what we love. We write down what we care about, what's really important. We remember our ancestors in ranks behind us, their love. And we touch the strength that is here for us. And then we go into the scary place, yeah? We face it and feel it. There was a wonderful quote from a passage that had been quoted by Jack Kornfield. Sorry about my scratchy voice. From the Buddha's early writings, which says, "How would it be if in the dark of the month with no moon, I were to enter the most strange and frightening places, near tombs and in the thick of the forest, that I might come to understand fear and terror? And doing so, a wild animal would approach, or the wind rustle the leaves, and I would think, perhaps the fear and terror comes now. And being resolved to dispel the hold of that fear and terror, I remained in whatever posture it arose, sitting or standing, walking or lying down. I did not change, until I had faced that fear or terror in that very posture, until I was free of its hold upon me. And having this thought, I did so. By facing the fear and terror, I became free. I was fascinated by the part of that that says, I remained in whatever posture it arose. And I take that literally, and I notice that I have been doing that. When I'm lying down in the early morning and I wake up with those fears, I have this sense of needing to stay still, needing not to get up, needing to stay still in that posture and let that inhabit me. Let it fully be there, yeah? And stay with it and see what happens. Stay with it and face it and be there, yeah? And not flee and let it go its course, because it feels as if it has something to do with me, something to say, something to be, something important. So in whatever posture it arose, we could do that as a practice, right? When we feel that rise up, it's kind of like freeze, right? Except don't freeze and see. Yeah, inquire. Find your breath, find the vitality of it, the vitality of what is. And then we notice that we need to be able to move. So we get condensed and get ready. We get very alert. Where's the opening? Where can I move? So this is the second piece, kind of, to stop and be exactly with, and then to notice, where do I feel a freedom of movement, like being girded, yeah? A freedom to move. How can I help? Out of a sense of freedom rather than constraint. Out of yes, even with no. So where does it feel free? And it might be a small thing, yeah? I read another wonderful little quote that said, sometimes you might not be able to be brave, you know? Sometimes being brave might be more than you can do. But when you can't be brave, can you be kind? Ooh, I thought that was a kind word, wasn't it? You know, what about in the moments when I can't be brave? Well, maybe I can be kind. You know, that's a kind of freedom of movement, right? That's being able to move. At the moment when I can't be brave, maybe I can be kind. Yeah. And so, what are our tools, you know? What are our tools for noticing and being skillful with in the places where we can move, yeah? The places where it just feels right to move, even if it's scary. So one thing I noticed was if we hold the sort of uncertainty as our gift, I don't know why, but for some reason the koan that came up for me was iron grinder or iron grindstone Liu. This woman who is known as being a pretty tough character, formidable. And she was a really good friend of Master Guishan. And she went off to see Guishan on his mountain. Guishan said, "Old cow, so you've come." And she said, "Tomorrow on Mount Wutai, there's a big gathering and feast. Are you going, teacher?" So mind you, Mount Wutai was some hundreds of miles away. They would be traveling by foot, right? So you get the sense that this, there's some play going on here. So Iron Grinder says, tomorrow on Mount Wutai, there's a big gathering and feast. Are you going? Guishan. And Iron Grinder Liu took off immediately. So, do you ever get that feeling these days, you know? Tomorrow there's the demonstration in Acacia Park, you know? Next week there's this going on in Denver, yeah? Are you going? Are you going to Washington? Are you, yeah? Are you going? And sometimes you might have Guishan's response, and sometimes you might have Iron Grinder Liu's response, and you don't have to have a right response and a wrong response, because you'll just be, that can be crippling, can't it? We have to have the freedom to find out, what's my response, yeah? What is it right now? And so then what are the tools? What are the tools? And so I came across this lovely talk by Joanna Macy. Some of the others of you might have seen it too. And she was, it was about Shambhala, the time being the time of the Shambhala warriors, and who go into the heart of the trouble. And this is a going into the heart of the trouble to dismantle the weapons of destruction. This might be going into our own hearts to dismantle the weapons of destruction there. Yeah, here. And it also may be going into the heart of troubles to dismantle the weapons of destruction that are around us, that are present. And she said, she was quoting Chogyal Rinpoche, I believe, who said, because war, I guess he was talking about, is made by the human mind, it can be unmade by the human mind. So now we go into training. What's made by the human mind can be unmade by the human mind. And our weapons are compassion and insight. Yeah? Karuna and prajna. Compassion, which gives the motive force. And compassion can be not being afraid of the suffering of your world. Isn't that an interesting definition of compassion? Not being afraid of the suffering of your world. Or being afraid and still being willing to be there. I guess I would add. Not being afraid suddenly felt like it was setting up some kind of a measuring stick, you know, a bar. But there's something sweet about that statement, that we could not be afraid of the suffering. And what is that like? What is it like at the moment when we are able to be in its presence and not be afraid of it? Not being afraid of our own suffering. Not being afraid of the suffering we meet. That sometimes is the biggest gift we can give if we're sitting next to someone who's suffering. The gift of not being afraid of their suffering. That is felt as a deep kind of support. Yeah? If I can sit by you and not be afraid of your suffering. And, but this teacher said to Joanna Macy, by itself, that compassion can be too hot. It can burn you out. Can you feel that as a possibility? That compassion can be too hot. It can burn you out. So it needs the companion of insight, of wisdom. And that's insight into the mutual belonging of everything. I love that, because we're always talking about interdependence and interpermeation, but there's something so full of heart about that, the mutual belonging. I belong to you and you belong to me, whether we like each other or not, right? We belong to each other. Thanksgiving week is a good week to remember that, right? And and we know that the line, and to know this insight, to know that the line between good and evil runs through the landscape of every human heart. Isn't that a nice expression? The line between good and evil runs through the landscape of every human heart. And of course, there's a line and there's no line, right? And so, but the teacher said, that is a little cool by itself. Yeah? A little abstract, a little too wise, as the poet said. I will go down to the Big Sur River and plunge my arms in up to the elbows. We need the heat of compassion to balance the cool of insight. So those are our tools, and we already have them, right? You have your compassion, you have your insight. And those are the tools that we can dedicate ourselves to developing. And that's what it feels like to me to be girding my loins, to be girding my loins with compassion and insight, with determination to be flexible and to find them wherever I can find them, and to dedicate myself to that. I think that's it. Do we have time? Yeah, we have time. Can't be brave, perhaps you can be kind, yeah.
For some reason that's kind of sticking to me. Because I do feel like with all the conflicting opinions of what's next and what's right and what's wrong, and who's right and who's wrong.
Yeah.
I feel this fearfulness. Yeah. About talking to my neighbors too long, or wondering what are they thinking, or what are the differences between us. Mm-hmm. And that be kind, that I can do that.
Yeah.
Just a simple today when I was walking, I was thinking, maybe I should bake some cookies.
Yeah.
And take them to my neighbors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just don't want that beautiful separation that feels like it's hanging in the air.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about politics. I just want to
Just want to take cookies. Yeah. You know, I love the expression disarming, right? When you hear her smile is so disarming, you know, or a child's smile especially. Cookies are about as disarming as you can get, right? Yeah. Yeah. And that's just the movement of, that's the kind of freedom of movement that I think I wish for. Yeah. And sometimes it feels like I got to do the other kind of thing too. Not the other kind of thing as in being doing something that separates, but yeah.
So maybe the other thing is, I'm just thinking on my own terms, maybe the other thing is insight with compassion. Mm-hmm. Being able to say something about what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
With compassion.
Yeah, risking.
Yeah, risking.
Yeah.
Saying something. Mm-hmm. Because I know that's going to come up. Mm-hmm. I'm worried.
Yeah. So not knowing what to say, yeah, and being willing to try saying something, that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even saying something to the effect, I'm struggling with what words to use, or just prefacing it with that, mm-hmm, so that when you don't know what to say, you can still say, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
But saying it, and yeah, just that.
Well, it seems no accident that we're reading about grief. And Levine talks about grief as being fear and despair and the things and loss that actually break our hearts open. And that this the antidote or the next step is to meet everybody with an open heart. And I guess that seems to be a nice, also, with wisdom and with maybe compassion is that open heart, mm-hmm, but that seems like the sidestep when I don't know how to meet people or don't know what to say. There's the possibility of that, and at times it feels like the heart is like this old piece of leather. It's like, you know, can I really open up to this right here in front of me? But this is that, and that's the task as well in these times for me, who would love to shut and withdraw, mm-hmm, position, mm-hmm, and maybe go away, and maybe say, well, I'll read fiction for the next 4 years. CNN's done. That kind of ultimatum of the black and white, but to go into the compassion and the wisdom and the open heart, it's like an experiment in possibilities. You hear that it was the division between people that brought this on. And I think how can that be broached, and how did not I not? When was I shut down, or when was I content among my people to not even be there? To have any sense this could happen, and there was so much of this distress that manifested this way. Not my way, but this way.
Because a lot of people suffer in silence. That's why. It's easy not to see it when people don't say anything.
So that's interesting that you say that, because when you were talking about opening your heart to people, it's been so much in my face for many months anyway, that if I'm in the presence of anybody for very long, that suffering is apparent. And that just to be able to be open to being in the presence of each other's suffering is a start anyway.
Yeah.
And joy. Each other's suffering and joy. What if, you know, we think of each other, we identify each other so much by our ideas and by our beliefs and our opinions, and what if we suddenly notice that our beliefs and opinions are much smaller part of ourselves than we think they are?
Could you tell the koan the story of the two people or gnomes or something on either side of the door that fought all night?
Oh yeah, an ogre outside pushing and beating at the door, and an ogre inside pushing and beating at the door, and all night long they fight each other until the dawn comes, and then they fall down and roll around laughing. They were friends the whole time. That one. That's a paraphrase. But
so I'm drawn back to your dream.
Mm.
You're in a new place. And yet, the only figure that stands out for you is your father.
Mm-hmm.
So he's coming from an ancient place.
Mm-hmm.
And there he's with you in the new place.
Mm-hmm.
It's that lovely tension that strikes me as important.
Mm-hmm.
That even in the new place, there's the old wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That can strengthen us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give you back home.
Yeah.
I recently saw Susan Gordon speak. Susan and her husband Peter run the Benatucci farm.
Yeah.
And they have for over a decade. And for those of you who don't know Benatucci Farm, their water has been poisoned from the PFCs that were released into the fountain watershed. And it's very uncertain time, right?
Yeah.
And she gave this beautiful speech. And I've been finding myself asking elders around me, because I've been experiencing so much uncertainty, as many of the folks who I know, on many different levels. It's interesting how they're all interweaving right now. And I asked her, Susan, what do you, because we were talking about Standing Rock and
yeah,
this thing, and I said, Susan, what do you, like, you're the elder. You have such wisdom. Like, what gives you hope right now? And she just looked at me and she just said, you young people.
You
did. I was like, shit. And I think that's what's kind of been giving me hope has been that sort of reflection of that, the wisdom of the elders kind of speaking through in the new halls and just trying to save myself from getting distracted by all this idle chatter of anxiety, because there is such idle chatter of anxiety, and I see it amongst all my friends, all my generation right now, and it's very interesting. But I feel that tension. It's a good tension.
There's something in me that doesn't want to throw out your idle chatter. I mean, it's. Were you feeling that too? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait, you want to say anything?
No, just that I was feeling it too.
Yeah.
It has a place.
Yeah.
It's not the place.
Yeah.
But it's part of the place.
Yeah. I don't know how idle it is.
I think maybe on just kind of on a structural level, it's overburdening, you know, incessant inundation of information,
right.
Mm-hmm. Constant news of the next thing that's happening,
right.
And I think that's what I grew worried about, is how that's actually can deplete you of the necessary reserves.
Absolutely. You have to step away from it,
yeah.
Don't you? Yeah. And to then look at it and feel the fear and feel the anxiety.
Right.
Because anxiety is a very appropriate response also.
Right.
It's just not the only
right.
It's not the only thing you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're all that's part of the uncertainty, is how much do I need to look at this and how much do I need to look away?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's been the dominating question for me.
Yeah. And how many things will sort themselves out and how many things won't sort themselves out unless I sort them,
unless we sort them together.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I thought you were going to say, when you were talking about the protesters, because I started to smile, I heard about the protesters getting shot with the water, but I also heard today that more high school students in the history of the United States are protesting right now,
mm-hmm.
than ever have.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me hope, made me smile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This and there's this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to the anxiety thing for a moment. Speaking of the elders and the wisdom, our dear Elizabeth King, who was a liaison for Joan for a time, remember her sharing that Joan shared with her when there was an anxious moment. Joan just said, anxiety is excitement without breath. So if you give yourself breath, you find it's actually excitement and energy to do something. You're just not breathing.
Yes.
Right? Excitement unsupported by breath.
Yeah. Unsupported by breath.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why it has a place. But how do we help harness that energy by that?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I guess first you take an antihistamine.
So you can breathe?
Yeah.
Time to wrap it up. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.